No.
What's your least favorite scary movie?
You're crazy. I knew you were crazy the minute I laid eyes on you. Crazy. Okay, this is what we're going to do, crazy. Welcome to What's Your Least Favorite Scary Movie, the podcast where we talk about the good, the bad, the ugly, and the crazy in all of our favorite
and least favorite
scary movies.
Crazy.
Because we believe every horror movie rivalry has a fan base.
Even though we got this all fucked up, dude.
Yeah, well, you didn't pick up your song.
Crazy.
Crazy.
We talk about scary movies and
we defend them and also shit talk them sometimes.
Yeah, that's what we do.
It is.
By the way, on that right there, like you, the delivery of that last part, I was like, all right, here's what we're gonna do, and it's like a pause, like crazy.
Crazy.
Just like slips it in there. Welcome everybody.
Hi.
We are gonna be talking about a crazy episode today.
Boy, I was not ready for people to be surprised at how much we liked Wrong Turn 4 last week, and I feel like you guys might not like what we have to say about Saw 3D today.
But you know what? The real ones that supported Wrong Turn did show up, and I appreciate y'all.
You know what? Thank you guys for listening, even if you don't agree with us.
Yeah.
I think it's fun to listen. There will be times that I'll listen to people talking about a movie I love and they hate it, and I'm like, oh, but okay.
Yeah, that's kind of how I am too.
Yeah.
Some of these other movies, these lesser known, the Wrong Turn 4s out there need some love sometimes.
Yeah,
too, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what we're here for.
Brief announcement. If you're a member of our budget tier Patreon, our bonus episode on Scream Queens Season 2 came out over the weekend, where we talked about the winner, who will be featured in this episode today, because they were featured in the movie we're discussing today.
Yeah, so, Saw 3D, baby.
Yeah, so that's a lot of fun. Go check that out if you're a budget tier patron. If you're not a budget to your patron, you can be one. The link is in our show notes below. It's the very last part. Scroll all the way to the bottom.
We got all kinds of things. We're also going to be having an announcement next week
about the about the Patreon.
Yeah, so you know,
some changes coming, so
be on the lookout for that.
Yeah,
so that's our announcements, right?
Yes, that's the announcement.
All right, so I have polls this week, actually.
And it's as stupid as the movie that we both loved.
I'm so happy with it, though.
Yeah.
Okay, so we asked everybody this week, if a hoot hollers in a forest and no one is around to hear it, does it make a sound? So, over on Twitter, 75% of the people out there believe it does make a sound, while 25% believe it doesn't. And on Instagram, 100% say yes, it makes a sound.
I think the hoot is for the hooter, not necessarily for the holler. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if I hoot in the holler, or if I hoot and holler, even if I'm the only one to hear it, I think that's what it's what's in my heart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. I think it makes a sound. I mean, it's out there, you know. It just has to be discovered.
Can we get matching hoot and holler tattoos? I'll be hoot and you be holler.
Yeah. I want to see like one of those necklaces, like one half of the broken heart is hoot and the other is holler.
I bet I could find like a broken heart necklace and I can engrave it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Fuck
okay.
Yeah.
We're doing that. Let's not forget to do it.
Okay. So that was our poll for last week's episode, which was Wrong Turn 4. So that's it. So let's get into our episode for this week, Jesse.
Yes,
you have teased me with all kinds of crazy information.
Crazy. So this kind of, some of it kind of started because I was trying to figure out, it felt like maybe there was something going on behind the scenes with Scream Queens Season 2. Not that I don't think Gabby deserved the win, but I was kind of like, hey, so our two finalists were a white woman and a Latino woman, and the role is for a Nazi.
For a white supremacist.
I feel like maybe she was a little bit preordained.
Yeah.
So I was trying to do some research, and I came across all kinds of drama that ended up being helpful more for this episode than for the Patreon episode. So that's where we're at.
I'm very curious to hear. And yeah, if you want to hear the journey of Gabby, you know, Patreon again.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so Saw 3D, or Saw the Final Chapter. If you're watching it in two dimensions, released October 29th, 2010. We watched it on DVD, but as of February 24th, 2024, you can rent it on YouTube, Google Play, Vudu, or Prime. If you're listening to this on release day, maybe give it one more day and see if any of the streaming options got renewed.
I remember it is on the Roku channel for those of you who have Roku out there.
All right.
Yeah, so it's free there.
Written by Patrick Melton and Marcus Dunstan. directed by Kevin Greuter.
Ooh. So, yeah, you said that there was something spicy with that going on.
We will get to that. Okay. Most of that is about that.
Damn, that's a lot of shit.
Yes, this is a very dramatic dude, shooting.
It's the fucking finale. It's got to be dramatic. Everything from behind the scenes to on camera, it's got to be huge.
Yes. Okay, music by Charlie Clouser, once again. Special effects makeup. The special effects makeup was mostly done by Amy Spear, and I've got a whole host of people involved in the prosthetics, which I think is just as important with this show, with this movie. Once again, we have Francois Dejeuner, Darren Bishop, Patrick Baxter, Jeff Dinishy, Jason Dethridge, Kyle Glenn Cross, Sean Sanson, Andrew Santagato, and Shane Zanders.
Damn, that's a lot of people.
A lot of prosthetics were involved in this.
All right.
Starring Tobin Bell as Jigsaw, yeah. Costas Mandalore as Hoffman,
yeah.
Betsy Russell as Jill,
okay.
Carrie Elwes as Lawrence Gordon, the doctor, Sean Patrick Flannery as Bobby, Chad Danello as Matt Gibson, Gina Holden as Joyce, Dean Armstrong as Kale, Tanedra Howard as Simone, returning from her breakout role in Saw 6, and premiering at her breakout role in Saw the Final Chapter is Gabby West as Kara.
Also, Kale is our boy Daniel from Wrong Turn 4.
The Fondunial himself.
He ended up
He
had a pretty decent role in this movie, too. Yeah. I was kind of surprised. Yeah. I thought he would have, like, a smaller role.
Yeah, I remember us. We didn't look up which character he was last week, but we just knew he was in this. And I thought he was going to be one of the little Saw Shop boys. Yeah. But he's actually the BFF of the Liar.
Too old. And shot before Wrong Turn 4, he looks so much older.
He's, like... And we were talking about this. He was thinner, but not in like a good way. He looked very gaunt.
Yes, he did. Yeah, he...
He had the right amount of weight on him in Wrong Turn 4,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, he was rocking the middle part in this movie, too.
And that's unfortunate. Okay. Travis.
Yes.
Time for our favorite game. Budget or Bugtard!
Well, big finale, grand finale at the time. So I'm going to go with Budget.
It is indeed Budget. A lot of it was because they made the decision to shoot this in 3D.
Okay.
And it was, at the time, the most expensive of the Saw films.
Wow.
It was $17 million budget.
Wow-wee.
Opening box office, once again, for U.S. and Canada. I don't know why I've been getting a lot of those designations lately, and I wonder if it's just because of the like whole 3D-ness of it all. But the opening box office was $22.5 million and a worldwide gross of $136 million.
Damn.
IMDb score of 5.5 out of 10.
Wow, that's way better than I thought people would be on this movie. I thought people would trash this thing on IMDb.
Yes, and it's fairly consistent with the two of the other ones I pulled. So my theme this week is gimmicky visual or direction style.
Ooh, I like that.
So the first one is Piranha 3D.
Okay, big old 3D. Dude, this is another when 3D. 3D was having a big resurgence. Jackass 3D also came out this year.
Mm-hmm. We've actually been watching a lot of our 3D movies because of the My Bloody Valentine 3D coverage we did a few weeks ago.
Yeah, and none of them have fucking 3D anaglyph.
Yeah.
It's driving me fucking insane. And
Travis bought 3D glasses so we could watch our 3D movies in 3D, and it's not working
none
out.
None of them have it, man. It's fucking pissing me off.
Anyway, Piranha 3D, released August 20th, 2010, budget of $24 million, and a worldwide gross of $83 million. IMDb score of 5.5 out of 10, 10 out of 10 in our hearts here in this household. Please go listen to one of our earlier episodes on this movie. It's amazing.
I feel like anytime we plug one of our older episodes, I gotta warn you, it's a little bit rougher back then.
Josh Stolberg thought we hated this movie because of the name of our podcast. Yeah, and we're like, no, it's sarcastic. We love it.
I forgot that he's like, no.
You are a hero on our show, Josh.
I'm going to reach out to him. I'm going to be like, hey, man, can you tell us some shit about some of the Saw movies you wrote?
Please.
Come on, man. We love you.
Okay. The second one. This particular gimmick is how low budget its effects are, and that is Birdemic Shock and Terror.
Oh, fuck. We haven't watched that
yet. We haven't watched it, but we watched a clip from it, and the birds are faker than In the Birds by Alfred Hitchcock.
It's so terrible looking.
That released February 27th, 2010, a buggity bugged head of $10,000.
Yep, that sounds right.
No information on a worldwide gross, and an IMDb score of 1.7 out of 10. I really want to watch it because that little clip I saw, I was like, oh, I feel like this movie knows exactly what it is.
Yeah, for sure, man. It's, 1.7, that's brutal. That's the lowest I've ever heard on
I feel
the
like
show.
It doesn't deserve that low of a score because it clearly knows what it's doing.
It's self-aware.
Yeah.
Yeah, come on, guys.
And then final is a found footage.
Okay.
And I picked it for another reason, which will become clear in a little bit.
Can I guess?
Yes.
Found footage 3D?
It's not 3D.
Okay.
It's just found footage.
That's the name of a movie. Found footage.
Oh,
3D.
Okay.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
Paranormal Activity 2.
Whoa, okay.
So that released October 22nd, 2010, a budget of $3 million, a worldwide gross of $177 million, the Blumhouse method, and an IMDb score of 5.7 out of 10, somehow the highest on this list.
That's insane. That's a good movie, though.
It is a good movie. I can't believe it's higher than Piranha.
That movie is insanely good. I think people just think, like, oh, Piranha, it's not that great. And
dude,
it's, like,
it's...
Come on. No, man. It's so
gallons of blood. I just remember, like, editing that as we were moving into the house, like surrounded by boxes. We had just gotten our internet connected.
I remember those days, man. Yeah. Early days. Aja don't fuck around.
He does not. Okay. I got a lot of taglines. A lot of them are variations of like in heart pounding 3D, in eye popping 3D. So I didn't write all of them down because that's fucking stupid and I hate it.
Yeah, okay.
The one on the poster is in heart pounding 3D. This Halloween, the traps come alive in real 3D.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, it's not that great. It's not selling me on the movie unless you're just trying to sell the 3D-ness of it all, which, nah.
They spent enough money on it.
The only 3D movie that I was genuinely excited to go see back then was Jackass 3D, because I was like, how the fuck are they going to do that in 3D? Saw 3D, I was going to be like, eh, whatever.
With like, more Dave England poop skits than normal.
There's going to be poop flying at you.
Poop flying and flying at you.
Yeah, okay.
The time has come for all to experience the last act of a legend.
Okay.
That's okay.
Yeah, it's okay.
I mean, I wonder if maybe it would hit harder if this was actually the last movie, but we know now, in 2024, we know that there's at least one more coming out.
So. Yeah, there's many more on the horizon after that one.
Yeah. This Halloween, witness the final act.
Come on. Okay.
Will you survive until the end?
I don't know, will I?
every master craftsman and all true geniuses always save their best for last.
That's good. I like that.
I feel like Kevin Greider threw that in there because he was pissed and he's been involved in all of them.
Oh, okay.
So, because remember, Kevin Greider did the editing in the early ones and his directorial debut was Saw 6.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
Okay. So... Saw 3D was greenlit in July 2009 with David Hackle of Saw 5 set to direct, returning writers Melton and Dunstan.
Okay.
Pre-production occurred in September 2009. At the time, it was called Saw Endgame.
I like that.
I want to live in this alternate universe where we have to differentiate between whether we're talking about the Saw Endgame or the Marvel Avengers. Endgame.
Everybody being, you fucking ripped off Saw, you motherfuckers.
I want to live that. In that world. So it was supposed to be two separate movies because they knew there was a lot of loose ends to wrap up and they wanted to give everybody answers to all of their questions. However, after Saw 6 did not perform as well as they had wanted it to in the box office, the studio was afraid to greenlight more than one. So really? They were only allowed to do one more movie.
Oh, come on, guys.
In January 2010, Twisted Pictures dismissed Hackle. Couldn't find out why. They just dismissed him as the director and they made Kevin Greider come back. Because of a contractual clause. Kevin Greider is pissed because he was actually on set at Paramount about to start directing Paranormal Activity 2.
Whoa, really?
Yes.
Oh, damn.
So not only was he pulled from that, but he was brought in 2 weeks before production, before filming began on this. He missed all of the pre-production, all of the script writing, all of the set building, the casting, all of that. He came in, and because he had been involved in the franchise from the very beginning, he saw the script. He had what they called comprehensive rewrites 2 weeks before everything was supposed to start. But there's only so much you can do when sets are built, props are ordered, cast members have been hired. There was only so much that he could do. And in an interview with, I want to say it was either Melton or Dunstan. It was one of the two of them.
Okay.
They were like, you know, and he was upset. He was brought in. He didn't know what was going on. He's like had 2 weeks to get caught up, and he had all of these suggestions because he's been a part of the series. And because he's been a part of the series, he knew what was and what was not realistic, but still he had very lofty goals for what could be done.
Wow.
And apparently he had a blog going on at the time, and he wrote about what was going on. I didn't read the blog, but he was pissed. This was not. And so when we were talking in our Patreon bonus episode about how he seemed very short with the final two actresses,
yeah,
I was like, it's because he didn't want to fucking be there.
I can see that now. Yes. In his face. But at the time, though, they didn't even say he's gonna be directing Saw 3D. Mm-mm. I feel like they may have pulled him in for that beforehand.
Yeah.
And then like after he did that, like, all right, we're gonna need you to actually direct that movie now too.
Yeah. So there was just a lot of shit coming at them. They had a complete change in directors, one that was pissed and wanted to redo everything. They had to jam two movies worth of plot lines into one.
God,
and then add on top of that, they're doing this 3D technology, and it appears that all of the cast and crew were very split on the experience of working with 3D. Kevin Greuter didn't like it because he was like, it's different than in 2D, because if you shoot something from two different camera angles and say you've got light shining off of your arm in one shot but not in the other, when you do that composite image, it looks fucked up in 3D.
Oh, man.
So it makes it even more like you have to be very careful about how you shoot stuff. Mark Berg, one of the producers, was like, yeah, I mean, I worked on My Bloody Valentine 3D. It's not that big a deal. We're fine with it.
Oh, okay. Well, and the 3D in that movie is so fucking good too.
Yeah,
I would have been like comfortable, like, okay, this guy knows what he's doing.
Tobin Bell was like, it's not gonna affect my acting, and part of me wonders if that's because he had 3 minutes of screen time.
Yeah, he's this. Not even like really,
barely in it.
He's
like, yeah,
like the bill of my cap might be like a little bit coming in check.
And Kostas Mandler said it was tedious and took too long.
Ah, dude, but Kostas in 3D, come on, man. I feel like he would have like been the ones like, you know, one of the people there championing it. He's like, I want to be in the theater. Kostas demands to be in the theater with these people sitting in the chair next to them.
I do feel like this was one of the longest filming dates. Most of it took place on in like a closed set in a studio. It went from February 8th, 2010 to April 12th, 2010.
Wow.
So that's a really long time for one of these movies.
For a Saw movie, for
yeah,
sure. Yeah,
that's almost...
I mean, it's like twice a normal one.
Yeah, it's almost 3 months. So yeah. It's a really long time. Or is it 2 months? February to
it's
March, March to April. No, 2 months. Two full months. Yeah.
Okay, whatever.
Math yeah.
is weird.
Yeah, it is. Time math is always the weirdest math. So yeah, this is a very fraught production. And I think some of that comes through on screen. And now some of the stuff makes more sense having read that.
Damn.
So yeah, just really intense, and one of those that in like 10 years they're gonna do a documentary on.
I want to
like,
watch that.
Yeah,
I can't wait for that.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, and I'm actually just thinking of parts of this movie now, and I'm going, oh
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, which is why I said that last tagline was Kevin Greuter being petty, because he was like, all right, yeah, cool, pull me in for this and take me off Paranormal Activity too. Can you imagine a world where Kevin Greuter directed that one?
I don't know, but like that, who directed that one? That
Todd Williams, I think, is his last name. Todd
in
something.
Paranormal Activity 2?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I don't know. I mean, he was contracted. Like he knew that this was a possibility.
He knew it was a possibility, but still, you would think that there would be like a level of professional like understanding that like he's working on something else.
It's a fucking business. They gotta like churn this shit out. This is one of their fucking cash cows right here. Saw.
Yeah. Well, except for the fact that they decided that they were only gonna do one more instead of two, even though they had planned out like this final one being two stories.
That's why they couldn't drop the ball on this
one. And this is not something that I found in my research today, but something that I'd read in the past is that Joyce knew that Bobby was faking, because a lot of people cite hers as the most unfair death in the whole franchise, and apparently originally she was in on it, and there was like a scene cut that showed that she knew it, but it was changed in this final cut. It's made very explicit throughout the rest of it that she did not know. So that change ended up, and the time crunch they were in and the amount of, you know, what they were able to work with left some stuff in that was confusing. And it's like, why is he like punishing her in one of the worst ways we've ever seen in this franchise just for being married to a moron?
Well, I have thoughts about that. too. I mean, the thing is, it's Hoffman who is like, you know,
that's
his
true.
Thing in this series is he just kind of uses this as a avenue for murdering.
Yeah, people. maybe John didn't actually have that as like she wasn't supposed to be in that, and he's like, now fuck her.
Yeah, no, this girl. Yeah.
I don't like the pantsuit she wears.
She just needs to not be around because she has terrible judgment in partners.
Yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
All right.
So, all that being said, I'm very excited to talk about our good, bad, ugly, and crazy in this one.
Crazy. Okay. Yeah, I guess you know, our episode's just going to be crazy this week.
It has to be because that word is said about 50 times in this movie, and they're all said by Chad Danello.
Okay.
Who we did, after this movie was over, we did immediately put it on the first Final Destination. And we discovered he's named Todd, also with 1D, like the director that took over Paranormal Activity 2. And we were like, why is it spelled Todd with 1D? And we were coming up with all of the stupid possible longer versions of Todd. And Travis was like, all right, what's Todd short for? And it was actually Transfer on Death. And we were like, oh, that has to be intentional.
I have never heard anybody say that. I feel like I broke ground with that discovery. I'm going to take credit for it. And I realize that I probably don't deserve it.
Jeffrey,
at all.
Feel free to reach out to us when you write your next movie.
There are people way smarter out there than me. I guarantee you somebody figured that shit out. But I want to feel good about myself for once, people.
I bet if I go listen to that old episode of the Dead Meat podcast, like the very first one I ever listened to, they'll be like, yeah, he's named that because blah, 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 blah. And I've forgotten it because it was 3 years ago that I listened to it.
Okay, so we ready to go into our thoughts on this one? Good, bad, ugly, and crazy.
Crazy.
Okay. All right, I guess I'll kick it off.
Yeah.
So one of the things I like most about this entry is this is the most slasher we get out of all of the Saw movies because we get Kostas Hoffman going on his fucking rampage.
He's completely rogue.
He is, and I love it. It's so cool. It's like a different element to all of these movies before. Like we've had like the...
we saw his destruction in the end of 6, like where he went... Burned all of his bridges.
I like that. I mean, it was a good way to like continue that story. It's like, okay, well, he's fucked. How is he going to react to that? And the way he reacts is like a super entertaining thing to watch. But no, I like that. Like, this series has kind of had variety in like the stories it's told. Like, we've had the police procedural thing in the first one. We've had just straight up torture porn and like most of the rest of them. And then this one, like, we go like, let's just fucking turn it into a slasher halfway through too.
Yeah.
And that's what happens. It's awesome. I love watching it. I think the trap designs in this one are really well done.
Yeah. Supposedly really cool. That garage trap was like, had been pitched numerous times for other movies and they were always told it was too violent.
The one with Chester?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, dude, it's so fucking violent, man. Like, anytime I watch that, I just cringe at all the shit going down. Like, you see his skin peeling? It's so disturbing.
He worked with... I love Chester Bennington and... I am so sad at his passing. It's very tragic. And apparently when he got this part, he worked with an acting coach to make sure he gave the best performance, even though all he does is like scream and reach. He was like, he was like, and I had to access so many emotions and I had to really think about my character's motivation, why I'm here, like how I would act.
If I'm being real, I was watching him last night. I was like, damn, he is actually a really good actor.
He really is.
Really shocking. As Christian would say.
Yeah, really shocking.
Yeah.
And like, side note, like that was one of the moments where Talia made us pause and I like just pulled out my phone and I started playing Linkin Park on Spotify. So.
Talia, we had to go, she had to go outside for her little bathroom break and we had like a whole little Linkin Park.
Yeah, we toasted session to Chester.
Yeah. But he did a great job. I was very impressed with him here. He outshined Gabby.
He really did. Yeah. But, I mean, at least Gabby, even though she won like a supposedly breakout role and then immediately got killed, at least she gets to say she worked at Chester Bennington.
That's true, yeah. I tried so hard and got so far. And the other thing I have is I really like the idea for like the victim in this movie, the guy that fakes being a Jigsaw victim. Like, I like that idea. That's an interesting take on it. Because, yes. Like, obviously, there's going to be fucking grifters out there that are going to do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it was cool to see, like, that take on it.
I think probably one of the best real-world comparisons I can think of is, like, when we had the clown things happening a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And some of those were legit, like, creepers out there in the world and clown masks for whatever reason. But then people started staging it so that way they could get hits on their videos on their YouTube channel.
That should have happened here in Kentucky. Down there, yeah. Close to Harlan, like, where I'm from. Like Bell County, like, 30 minutes from where I grew up.
People like to hoot and holler.
That's clowns, apparently.
Yeah.
All right. That's my good.
All right. This is like the peak of the campiness of the franchise, I think.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It is, besides the first one, the most quotable. I love it. It's just so over the top in so many ways. Like, we get, like, the public, like, we've thrown all sense of, like, never mind that we have to suspend disbelief in other movies, because it definitely has to happen.
Yeah.
This one, throw it all out the window. Like, none of it makes any... Like, how did we set up this trap in this, like, public showcase? You know what I mean? With the little wood boys.
Yeah.
And we've got, like... There's just so much happening, and I can't even put it into words.
It's so over the top.
It's so over the top, and it's so silly, and it is a person that you're like, wow, it's really despicable to exploit other people's tragedies and exploit other people's need for hope, which is what he's doing. And it's one of those where he's very much an unmitigated, like, okay, maybe you do kind of deserve a little bit of comeuppance in a way that, like, other people, you're like... Okay, well, he had depression. Same. Like, just give him a prescription to Prozac instead of, like, throwing him in a wire maze, you know? Like,
yeah.
It is an uncomplicated movie.
Yeah, it really is.
Also, we get Cary Elwes hamming it appropriately, hamming it up.
See,
I love that he came back.
One of the things in the first movie that I would say is his acting didn't really hold up. Like, he was just kind of
perfect for this perfect one.
He was born to play Saw 3D Lawrence, Dr. and I think Lawrence Gordon, a doctor.
I think one of the best things about it too, because I talk all the time about how much I love Robert Pattinson's interviews for the Twilight series. Cary Elwes did this series of interviews with other cast members for, like, promoting Saw the Final Chapter. Hmm. And they were asking, like, which movie is this trap from? And he just kept saying, is that a real trap? Is that a thing? Who puts out a movie?
It's
like,
it's
he didn't know any of them. He didn't even know the ones from the first one that he was a main character in.
He fucking shit on the entire series for so long because they fucked him hard.
But he did have, like, a really sweet thing where he was like, I appreciate all of the fans that love me and have cheered me on. I wouldn't be here without you guys. So...
That's nice.
Listen, he might hate the franchise, but he doesn't hate us who love it.
We need to, for people who don't remember, go back and listen to our first Saw episode if you haven't yet. But to just kind of summarize it, he got fucked over, like, money-wise.
Yes, I don't blame him. Him and Kevin Greuter probably have an I Hate Twisted Pictures fan club right now.
Dude, they probably do. Like, they probably, like, bonded hard over that whole experience. He's probably the reason why he got him back on this movie. Is like, Kevin's like, I fucking hate this shit, too. Come over here, like, let's just bitch about it and make it, like, as over the top and stupid
as
possible.
I'm pretty sure I said it before, but how do you get Dread Pirate Roberts on your cast and then fuck him over like that?
I know, man. I'm glad that it was resolved, though. I'm glad that we at least got to have him back in the series.
Yes,
for one
it
more
does make me so sad that this was split into, like, it could have been two movies and we could have gotten more of Lawrence Gordon the Doctor.
I know.
I am very, very upset about it, but I do like what we get with him, and I like that he once again is morally ambiguous, but this time in favor of Jigsaw. He said that he was treating his character as though he had Stockholm syndrome, and I wonder if part of that's relating to real life. And I feel like a lot of his lines are, like, fourth wall breaking. I made notes of them in my notes, so we'll talk about them when we get to them.
Okay, cool. All right, you got anything else?
That's my main good. It's just, it's uncomplicated fun.
Yeah, it really is. It's just stupid
Turn
fun.
Turn your brain off, eat some popcorn, drink beer if you're into that.
Okay. All right, on to the bad. So, the first thing I have is, I don't really feel like this movie had enough to make the 3D worth it. Like, I'm watching this as a 2D movie, and there's nothing that I'm like, I'm really missing out on that experience with this one right here. Like, it's just like...
Yeah, whereas, like, obviously I'm going to draw this connection because we just talked about it, and also because of Mark Berg as the, you know,
the producer,
a tie-in between the two of them.
Yeah.
When we watched My Bloody Valentine 3D, we both were like, I wouldn't hate watching this in 3D. I'd be curious to see what the effects are, because yeah. they look like they would be really interesting. They aren't hammy, and they do seem like they would add a nice little bit. Whereas in this, it's like, all right, we're going to have a drill coming at you, or we're going to throw a saw at the screen.
Yeah, or there's like some, maybe some chunks, like a couple of pieces of chunks of like flesh coming your way. But
yeah.
And like when, at one point, there's like, and here's a Billy in the foreground.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, is that really all you're giving me here? Like, it's... This isn't really like selling it for like being, and then that kind of makes sense with it being kind of like a last minute decision.
Yeah.
You were saying like where nobody was like fully on board with it. Like, you know,
it's a very split decision. Yeah.
It makes sense. I also feel like even though I love the idea of Bobby being a little grifter, I feel like they did not flesh it out well at all. Like there's so many things that you could poke a hole in. Like,
I would have loved a little bit more of a flashback scene. Like, okay, so I'm sorry, I'm butting in some with this.
Okay.
Because this is one of my bads, too, is the timeline with everything is weird. Because
that was one of my last ones here, yeah.
Yeah, because I said that last night when he gets his tape and he says, you've been doing this for years. And I was like, I thought the timeline between the first one has been a year at the most. So, like... I know that, like, Jigsaw himself, like, some of his traps have been going on before the first movie came out. So that's fine. But, like, I feel like you're saying, we needed a little bit more of that buildup, like, showing, like, those becoming more prominent, them getting the idea, them scheming. I would have loved to see Bobby and Kale scheming some, you know?
Yeah, it would have been nice to have something like that. But, like,
yeah.
I'm also thinking, like, okay, would they, would the, like, who all is actually buying this? Because I feel like... The cops would have noted, like, this is something sketchy. Like, we don't have any records of any shit like this going down. This guy is just telling stories like this. Like, he's not being real about it. I feel like they would have said something about it.
Yes. I was thinking about, like, a Gone Girl type situation. Or, yeah. like, that fucking documentary we watched that everybody was real crazy about on Netflix. That was a very similar kind of Gone Girl thing. Like, so, did he just appear one day with bloody titties and his wife, like, helped heal him?
Did he actually do, like, did he actually cut himself?
Yeah, he had, like, little scars.
So he did? Okay.
Yeah. Which I don't think that he could have used scar wax because presumably he was still fucking his wife because he seems like the type. He would probably fuck his wife if she had titty scars, you know, or if she had bleeding titties. Not when she had titty scars. He'd be like, we need to laser that shit off.
Okay.
Anyway, so
I'm sorry, that's just painting like a weird mental image of like just like blood coming out of the nipples. I'm like, what the fuck is happening?
Oh my god.
Like, okay, yeah, that's yeah. Weird. No, the thing that like I'm thinking though is like Jigsaw has never made this shit private. He puts mm-hmm. that shit front and center. He wants the cops to know about it. So like if there's one where some dude's claiming, hey, he had me too, and they're like, okay, well, we never knew about it, like He always has, like, so many other people involved in these, too. Like, I don't know. Like, it's just, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
It falls apart if you think about it too hard.
Yeah, like, did he just show up bloody, saying he was attacked, and then the cops, like, what, weren't ever able to find the location?
Yeah,
you know?
It doesn't make any sense.
Like, would he not have reported it? Would the cops not have asked questions once he put out his memoir?
Yeah.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
I'll give it a pass because I do like the idea of that, though. But
yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I think it would have been really great to see how he managed to convince the cops.
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen that.
My bad. Besides that, because the timeline fuckery
mm-hmm.
was a big part of my bad. The other one is the blood. The fake blood.
Oh, yeah, it's not good.
Yeah, it's not good. And here's my thoughts on exactly what happened based on my experience. And I might be off the mark, but this is what has happened to me when I have tried to make my own fake blood. And it's when you've got a jar or a glass or whatever, and you fill it up with water and cornstarch or whatever else you're using as a thickening agent, you put in the drops. And it's the same as if you're doing like cookie frosting or coloring batter for like a cake or something.
Yeah.
It's always going to look darker when it's in like a liquid form and it's in a big pile.
Mm-hmm.
Once it spreads out, bakes, dries, whatever have you, it lightens up, especially with something like water and cornstarch and food coloring.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because I've had this happen where I've tried to do like some fake blood just on my shirt, last minute, spur of the moment, cosplay type thing, and it came out pink, like what we see in the movie over and over again. So I think their fake blood, for whatever reason, if it has something to do with issues with the 3D technology, which it shouldn't because of Berg, but whatever. It sounds like he was kind of fucking over all of this at this point anyway.
Yeah.
I wonder if it was like some sort of an issue where they couldn't make it as viscous as they needed it to be. So as soon as it like dried or thinned out in any kind of way, it became super pink.
I bet you're right.
But it's very distracting the entire time. And then you can obviously tell that there's like digital effects over top of it. And it's like, if you're doing digital effects, make it fucking red. And just, you also have to imagine, Real D3D at this time wasn't even like the red and blue glasses anymore.
No.
It's the little sunglasses that you get at the dorky little Cinemark and you have to put it back in the like recycle and we'll sanitize it later bin.
Like, I know what they were doing. I thought they were just throwing that shit away and recycling it.
Oh no, they definitely like sprayed like some Lysol on it and put them back out.
That's way smarter than what I was thinking. But yeah, so, just color correct it if you're doing that shit. It's
but
so easy.
No, instead we get pink foam.
Yeah.
The entire time.
Okay, I agree with that. All right. Ugly? All right. So my ugly is they killed Joyce. And, like, she had nothing to do with this. She was a fucking victim. She had a husband who lied about shit. And, you know.
I think what frustrates me even more about all of that is she didn't even have it. Like, she had no agency in any of her game.
Yeah.
Like, she couldn't plead for him to do anything because, like, Jigsaw knew that he was going to fail that trap.
If I were to make an adjustment, I would have made Kel that person at the end because he was the one that gave him the idea in the first place.
Yeah, and then Joyce is like blind to his lies or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like it just makes more sense.
Yeah, like flip flop them. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and then you're the noose that hanged your wife.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Boom. That's an easy rewrite.
Yeah, for sure. And like, I mean, still, she could survive there and it would still be ugly that she would be there, but it would also still fall in line with Hoffman's character.
Yeah. And then she can divorce his ass afterwards. Leave him.
Well, she'd probably still die. So probably, I guess it's like a form of divorce. It's just a little bit more extreme. Okay. What's your ugly?
So there's a lot of like specifically like derogatory towards women language in this movie in a way that I feel like there isn't in other movies. Like a lot of uses the words bitch and like slut and like specifically calling Jill crazy even in context that it doesn't make sense. Like we love joking around about it because it's so fucking over the top. Not because like we think like, oh yeah, she's actually crazy. Like she's like, he's like, oh, you knew, you put this reverse bear trap on his head, and she's like, yeah, he was trying to kill me. He goes, you're crazy. What? Because she didn't want to die?
I just love to say, well, you got this right here, and it's your fucking handprints.
After he touched it without fucking gloves on, it's still evidence, Gibson. Yeah, so I like, that's just weird to me in a way that makes me very, like, it's not there in the other movies the same way.
Yeah, a little bit
and,
more.
Yeah.
Maybe it was Greuter just taking out his anger in like a bad way.
Like, fuck you.
Yeah. Throwing like a real hard bitch right here.
Bitch. So I think that's probably like the biggest thing that stands out to me. Oh, also like that whole like the opening thing, like the way that they decide that they're like, yeah, fuck this hoe. Like, I mean, yeah, it's not cool that she is cheating on both of you. I get that. I agree with you.
Yeah.
But it's weird that in a life or death situation, they're like, close your fucking legs, Dina. Like,
the thing about that is it could have been so easy. Like, hey, just like put it halfway in between you and Dina. Like, it'll cut her side a little bit, but she could maybe survive that.
Yeah, that seems like a more survivable trap than most. And also, like, I feel like they could have agreed on, like, let's save each other in a more, like, heartfelt kind of way as opposed to fuck a hoe, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
because that's what it ultimately becomes.
But they were like, I always thought that they were high schoolers, so I felt like they were just kind of overpowered by their emotions in that moment.
Dude, I need you to look at the IMDb page for the two bubbies because they look so similar nowadays in their little like, I want to watch a buddy movie with them being bubbies. Hold on,
they didn't look anything alike in the opening of this movie.
They didn't, but they look like they could be like bestie. Like, it feels like it could be another type of horror movie where like there's a trio, it's the two of them plus one of plus the girlfriend of one of them, but like she's like, we could have the whole movie of what was happening with them before this happened.
Okay. Yeah
Sebastian Piggott look at him, his little curly hair and his mustache, and then look at Jonkor with his little curly hair and his mustache, okay. And they both look hipster indie in their little IMDb profile pages.
From like a little 8x8 image comparison, I can see the resemblance there a little bit.
I could see them play. I want to see them in things together because they had a decent chemistry for the garbage they were given to work with.
That's true.
Yeah. And that that scene is also has one of my favorite lines. Is, I think we're breaking up with you, Dina.
I love it so much. It's so stupid. Okay.
All right. What's your crazy.
All right. First off, I have Matt Gibson doing his Matthew McConaughey impression.
That was going to be mine. Because we were watching it once and we were like, does he sound like Matthew McConaughey?
You have to give before you can receive. It's like, you're not, you don't speak like this in any other scene,
Do you think before he came on to set that day, he went,
He probably did. He's probably channeling Matthew McConaughey in that moment.
I think it proves myself.
You don't need to be punching yourself, Jesse. That's terrible for you. Okay, well, then the other thing I have is we've had all kinds of like various forms of weird and crazy de-aging effects, but in this one right here...
That was gonna be my other one!
It's just a fucking backwards cap. I get it. This thing gets picked on all the time, but I think it's hilarious that they're like, all right, we got to take this back in time a little bit. Give them the backwards cap.
Also, I feel like, okay, I'm going to piggyback off this. This is my crazy, but it's not necessarily about the movie, but it's about the lore behind the movie, okay. Which is where people meme that moment. But in the meme I see referenced the most, it says Saw 6. Because that one is very flashback heavy with John Kramer and Piranha.
I would have thought it was Saw 6 also.
Yeah, because people are just like, oh yeah, there's lots of John Kramer flashbacks in that one. Yeah. But it's this one.
Yeah, no, I would have always thought it was Saw 6. But no, it's this one. Yeah. And like, I don't think that like a backwards hat is like necessarily like a stupid thing. I just think it's a stupid way to try and make somebody appear younger. You know, like Steve Buscemi type shit right there. With the
Hello,
skateboard.
Fellow kids.
Yeah, it's just exactly like that. It's so dumb.
Yeah.
All right, so I guess we got our crazy out of the way.
Yeah.
All right, so time to rate it.
Okay.
All right. Boy, this is a fucking wild ride, but I have a lot of fun with this one, so I think I'm going to give it an 8.
Oh my God, I was going to give it an 8 also.
Ah, yeah.
And listen, guys, this is... Honestly, at the end of the day, our ratings are a fun scale.
Yeah, it really is. We're not being critics here. Yeah, man.
Like, is it enjoyable? Is it rewatchable? Like, how often do we think about this? This movie lives in my head at all times.
Yeah, same here, man. Like, I think about this one a lot. But, like, also at the same time, we don't really give, like, actual criticisms. Like, the whole thing for this is just entertainment. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the whole thing is that, like, people just fucking love movies and they hate movies for different reasons.
Yeah.
We're not bad horror movie fans because we enjoy this. And you're not a bad horror movie fan if you hate it. We can all like different things. This is why we like this particular movie. We did an episode with our friend Mike Thompson where we talked about The Changeling. And I fucking hate that movie. And I talked about it the whole time, but I also talked about how I understand why people love it. I get why Mike rated it so highly. I get why it's a classic. I fucking hate it. I am still probably like one of the biggest horror fans outside of my horror fan friend group. Like, just like in my family in general, people are like, have you watched this movie? Because they're like, she knows everything horror. Or like at work, it's like, hey, here's a spooky thing, but you knew that already.
Yeah.
So, like, it doesn't, you know, everybody's got different things they like. And I think that's what's so great about art in general and about horror specifically, because it still brings us all together.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
yeah. All right, cool. So we got a starting average of 8.
Yes.
Fantastic.
We start off with a flashback to Lawrence Gordon, a doctor.
Yeah.
Slugging his way out of the bathroom, leaving a slimy little trail of leg blood, but not for long, because he's going to cauterize it up against a furnace and scream for an hour.
I'm sorry, but the way that you just described that, I just kind of pictured him as a slug, just kind of like leaving a trail behind.
What happened.
Yeah, I guess he is kind of a slug in this moment here. All right, so yeah, he's alive. We get that must have been huge back in the theater whenever that came out. I would have fucking lost my shit.
I'm trying to remember how I felt, because I know I came home from school and I watched this with my mom.
Okay,
So I'm trying to remember, because I did that. This was also the next year is when Scream 4 came out and I got carted at the theater. So I'm trying to remember. I feel like we both went.
I didn't watch. I only watched one in theaters and it was 3. So yeah, either way, fucking crazy.
So we cut to some public jigsawing.
Whoa.
We got Brad and Ryan and Dina in the world's worst love triangle. It sounds like Dina's just an insufferable person.
Seems like it. It's also kind of crazy that this is like, this whole thing has been staged in the middle of a busy fucking city.
It feels like an, like almost like in an outlet mall type situation. And they've got like a little storefront showcase room type thing. That's what it is. Because it's like construction materials is what they're like is on the banner behind them.
Yeah, but it's also just kind of weird because everybody just suddenly notices it at the same time.
Yeah.
And we don't see any like curtain being pulled back or anything. Like it's all just like been there in the open and everybody suddenly is like, oh, hey.
I wonder if maybe they thought it was like a prop thing until because the jigsaw tape is playing on like overhead speakers too.
Can you imagine though, like what kind of thing are you trying to sell me with this girl being held over top of a bus saw?
Right. Somebody just got fired from their job setting up the display. So the tape says something about proof who's the real alpha male, and that's just fucking stupid.
I think it's hilarious that Hoffman at all like be a, he's like yeah an he alpha definitely male type
yeah
of dude.
He was like, which one of you is the real alpha male?
Yeah.
I referred to him as Hoff in my notes exclusively, and I don't know what made me make that decision, but it just feels correct for him because I feel like he would call himself the Hoff. Yeah,
that's David Hoff.
Hasselhoff.
Yeah, he's the Hoff.
Yeah, but I feel like Hoffman would call himself the Hoff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess the other one could just be the hassle.
This guy, Detective Hoffman's the hassle, so, but whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they keep going back and forth and cutting each other. And then at one point, Ryan says, this is the chick that fucked me in your bed 2 days, or is the chick that fucked me in your bed 2 days ago worth your life?
Well, yeah, and Dina's kind of making it easy, too, because she's just siding with the winner each time that they get, like, a little bit
baby,
of leverage.
I love you.
Yeah, she's like, oh, I had to root for him because, you know, I would die otherwise.
I'm not going to lie, though. I love that kind of, like, raspy voice that she has. I can see why they were seduced by her.
Yeah, I could see it, too, but she's a trash person here.
Yeah, and so then they decide that they're going to keep the saw straight up, and they're like, what are you doing? And Brad goes, I think we're breaking up with you, Dina.
I love that so much. I love how everybody's just kind of watching. Like, they're like, the guys are over there like, do something. And they're all just watching.
Like, somebody at one point throws a briefcase at the window. I was like, oh, it's bulletproof glass.
Yeah.
And then when the cops finally get there, after the game's already over, her intestines are fully falling out. They're like, get a medic.
Finally, yeah. All
right. For who? I mean, Brad's got a little cut to his tum-tum, but that's it.
Yeah, yeah. You're not saving Dina. She's fucked. All right, so now we get a recap of Saw 6, because we need to know what happened in the last movie, obviously.
Yeah.
It was Kostas surviving his...
the reverse bear trap.
I'm sorry, Hoffman surviving the reverse bear trap. Mm-hmm.
They have a chase scene. And I think this is where we fully see the struggle between Betsy Russell and Kostas Mandler coming to light. Because it feels as though they refuse to appear on set with one another. Because every scene of them together, you actually don't see them share a shot. And if you do see them sharing a shot, one of them has their face turned away.
Yeah.
So it could feasibly be a stunt double.
And we like rewound the movie a few times. So I'd be like, okay, like, is this a body double? And it seems like every single one of those shots, it's plausible for it to have been somebody else.
Yes. Decent body double.
Yeah.
But body double plausibility nonetheless.
Yeah. So Hoffman is just walking around. He is bandaging himself up, wrapping his hand, cleaning up his face where it got torn up.
Dude, when we were in the craft aisle earlier at the store and I saw the curved needles, all I could think of was him sewing his face.
Yeah. Can you imagine how much that hurt?
No, I can't even get a shot. I'm such a baby. I couldn't sew up my own face.
I know.
I'd just be like, well, guess I just have flappy face now.
We're not Kostas or Talia. Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Talia related hard to that moment.
Yeah, she was like,
about it.
She was like, this is what you guys did to me.
Yeah. By the way, for anybody new listeners, she just had surgery. We didn't get her.
Yeah,
like,
no. She had a tumor in her jaw and they had to remove it.
Yeah.
It was very, it saved her life, literally. Yeah. So, you know, we didn't put her in a reverse bear trap. She had lots of good drugs.
Yeah.
And we stayed home with her for 2 weeks.
Yeah. Okay. So he's also catching the news report about William Easton being found dead. Mm-hmm. All right, so Jill has an interview with Matt Gibson because she's requesting him.
Yeah, she said she wants to talk to him specifically because he's in internal affairs, and that's very smart because Hoffman is a disgraced cop now. who was wanted for murder. And she was like, if you give me immunity and safety, I will tell you everything I know. Obviously, I was married to Jigsaw, and you guys have been wanting time with me. And he says, to give, to receive, you must give.
Yeah, which she does tell him. And you're like, okay, well, Hoffman is involved in it. And she's
he's
like
oh, ho, ho, ho. So Hoffman is burning his ideas, which why? Like, they all know who you're you.
He's just trying to go off the grid, I guess. I don't fucking know what's going on here. He's also smashing his phone, like, for the sweet 3D shots.
Leave your shit just behind. What is burning doing for anybody? You're not erasing your identity.
I feel like with the phone smashing, they were trying to get, like, fragments of the phone, like, going out at the screen. But, like, I saw it, and, like, nothing went towards the screen.
So we did a rage room a few months ago, and we took a lot of slow motion videos. And in our heads, we thought they'd be really cool. And when we watch them, it's just like...
Yeah.
Like, some of them were cool. Some that were really cool, but then some, like, because we paid extra for these little powder filled bottles, and it's,
those were cool.
Yours were mine was kind of underwhelming because I didn't know what it was. I went first and it was just like
bing.
And I was like, well, that's not gonna make the final edit.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of what they thought for the yeah in this scene here. So okay, and then he pulls out the picture of the next target, and it's Bobby.
Yeah.
So Bobby's doing a press tour for his book.
Survive. I didn't write what the undercard title was.
Not important.
That's the important thing. Yeah, Survive with periods after it, like Friends, except it actually, like, stands for something, unlike Friends. I mean, Friends stands for things, but not like F-R-I-E-N-D.
Yes.
Yeah. He gets scolded by his PR agent for not kissing his wife at the end of his tale. So his whole thing is that he survived a jigsaw trap, and he had to put hooks through his titties and connect some wires.
Yeah, like a plug-in, like some power, like electricity. I don't fucking know.
Yeah, I don't know what his full thing was.
He just kind of thought of this shit off the top of his head. It's like, yeah, I had to climb up with, like, shit in my tits and, like...
Yeah.
I had to plug something in. It was wild.
Yeah, as we all do at some point in our lives, just usually never all at once.
And everybody else is like, I don't know, man. Jigsaw is usually pretty inventive with his shit.
I feel like there are, like, mothers out there who are like, I've had suckling babies at Mateet, and I've had to plug in an appliance before. It seems doable.
Yeah, I mean, goddamn, dude.
Oh, my God. Okay, sorry, talking about the gravity of a nipple for a minute.
Gravity of a nipple.
We had a dog, her name was Nelson, and she had puppies, and it was an unplanned teenage pregnancy. She wasn't prepared for motherhood. She had 8 puppies, and they were huge, and we had no clue how she held that many puppies inside of her, because she didn't even look like she was ready for delivery when she actually had the puppies. And they were all such adorable puppies, but they're, like I said, they were giant. And so she's, you know, she had to nurse them pretty regularly, and one day she was just fucking tired of it, and like one or two were still nursing, and she just stood up and the puppies were just dangling from her, and we had to like go and try and get the puppies off of her before they fell.
That's a salt trap for a dog right there. Yeah, that's a nightmare right there.
She wasn't ready for motherhood. She was a surrogate for a lot of puppy parents
y'all
out there.
Need to take that dog on a press tour. Okay, so we now see Jill gets pignapped, and then it's Hoffman. He has her rigged up into a wild little trap here.
You know the only wrong thing about killing you, Jill? I only get to do it once.
And we see her get shredded in half, and then we find out it's just a dream.
The only dream sequence we get in all of the Saw franchise, and I think that holds true even to today.
Yeah, isn't that kind of weird?
It is kind of weird, but I also feel like it's very fitting for this specific entry in the franchise. Yeah. I would also allow it in Spiral.
They just wanted to have a death scene for her. Like, I guess they get two in this movie.
Yeah.
But, like, they just wanted, like, it was for 3D. Like, you get some chunks of Jewel flying at you here.
I feel like they were like, Betsy Russell is hot, and we need to show it off a little bit more. And I feel like Betsy Russell was like, I'm hot. We need to show it off a little bit more. So that's what they did. They put her in a little nightie and tore her asunder.
Yeah. Okay, so now we get Gabby. Gabby from Scream Queens 2. Mm-hmm. She gets her big scene here. I'm happy that they didn't phrase it in Scream Queens as a breakout role, because this obviously isn't a breakout role right here.
She gets, help me, Alan! And that's about it.
Yeah,
and
so
she screams.
We talked plenty about her in our Scream Queens Patreon episode for this month, but I have a theory that, like, she probably would have had way more range of mobility in the scene.
She can't hit a fucking mark.
She can't hit her marks.
She can't miss a mark if she doesn't have one.
She struggled so much in Scream Queens to be able to, like, hit. Like, she had, like, cues that she would have to hit, and she couldn't do it. So in, like, this movie, like, Kevin's just like, fuck it, tie her down. Put her underneath the wheel. She's not going anywhere. Just scream for me, please.
She did have an interview where she talked about having the prosthetic made for her head, and she said it's so fucking scary. She was like, layers and layers, you can't hear anything. All you have keeping you breathing is two straws in your nose. It's terrifying.
That is awful.
Yeah, because they had to make a mold of her head so that way they could squish it.
Yeah. I imagine it's got to be claustrophobic.
Yeah.
Oh, and we also get Linkin Park.
Poor little, as long as I have the time to edit it in, there's probably going to be several Linkin Park moments throughout this episode. Yeah. And it's just because I really love Chester and miss him. And
God,
Hybrid Theory was a huge part of my life.
He kills it in the scene
here. He does. Because he learns that, you know, things in life are a little bit more than skin deep.
And his skin's going to be coming off in this scene here.
Yeah.
So he's a white supremacist. Not exactly the most flattering role for him, but you know what? Dude took it like a champ. He did a good job.
I like that he like was like, listen, my head's already shaved, so that's cool. But please don't put any like big swastika tattoos on me.
Yeah, don't give me. Just give me like, just let me have some dignity in this role, please. Yeah,
like you're gonna show like my back muscles in a little bit. Can we just, you know, no swastikas, please?
Yeah. He's in the car. We got Gabby, his girlfriend. She's underneath one of the wheels.
Her character's name is Kara.
Yeah. He's got two bubbies that are outside of the car. Yeah, one of them's one got the chain
through his jaw. Yeah, much like Troy. Through the jaw and in his arms. Gonna say his front arms. They're just arms. And then the other bubby is like up against the garage wall. So basically he's got to reach for a lever in the engine to pull it before the jacks give out underneath his car, because otherwise it'll squish Kara's head, pull off his friend's jaw and arms, and run into the other guy, and then eventually when he crashes, he'll go flying through. His back is super glued to the seat of his car, and so like he has to pull off multiple layers of dermis
This is most jigsaw traps 60 seconds, but I think this time they get the white supremacist tax, which cuts that in half. They only have 30 seconds to do this.
It feels very much like the difference between Jeff and Riggs, where Jeff had three hours to move through a warehouse and Riggs had 60 minutes to get through all of Sawville.
Sawville. I forgot that was the name of this place.
Yeah.
But like in this point right here, I feel like it's like Hoffman's,
you know, I think we should have the white supremacist tax for things. Oh, you have to do something unpleasant? Let's make it faster and harder.
A little bit more difficult.
Yeah. As our friend Chad says, just punch every Nazi you meet.
Yeah.
I agree with that philosophy in life.
I mean, I honestly feel like Hoffman's like, I'm going to make it look like I gave you guys a chance, but like, really, you guys are just like scum. Like, I'm just going to get rid of you.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's kind of what happens. So like, Chester ends up tearing most of his back off, and then he never makes it to the lever. Mm-mm. Crushes Kara/Gabby's skull, rips his bubby's arms off, and then the car drives through the garage door wall and kills the other dude. And then it sends him flying through the windshield into another car because it's like a junkyard.
Yeah.
So everybody dead.
Yep, it's a pretty brutal crime scene. It is. Like I said at the beginning, this is a trap apparently that they've had in mind for a while, and it kept getting mixed as being too violent. And I guess at this point, they're like, nothing's probably too violent for this at this point.
Yep.
Which they, wouldn't you love to see Damien Leone design a saw trap?
Dude, I want his effects on a saw trap for sure. It would be awesome. It would be great. Maybe someday. I'm sure he would be down for something like that.
Yeah, I don't know if he could work within like Lionsgate and Twisted Pictures, though.
No,
I don't think he could handle a studio telling him what he's not allowed to do.
They needed to give him Saw X or Socks and like make it actually like X-rated.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh my God, Socks rated.
Yeah, exactly. Socks rated, yeah. Okay, so I think this is a really cool thing, because we cut from one Scream Queen winner to another Scream Queen winner, because we get to Nedra's character
walking Simone
into the support group for the Jigsaw survivors.
Bobby's leading, and there's cameras filming, And it feels very disrespectful because support groups like this are generally meant to be anonymous, so you can...
Yeah, it's so invasive. I can't believe like everybody's just kind of going along with this.
Yeah, so we've got some returning cast. Like we've got the mom from the last one. I think her name's Tara.
Tara, yeah.
We've got the little trust fund split arm baby boy from part five.
Guys, we have watched this movie 100 fucking times, and we just realized that was him the first time last night.
And one of the women from the dog pit. Yeah, there as well.
And you also get the old the older woman from when it's like you got to choose the old lady here or this guy with the sad life here from Saw Six.
Yeah. So and then there's another woman who's talking about how she had to knock her abusive husband into like some lawnmowers. And she was like, you know, it took that moment for me to realize he was abusive and I need to leave him. And it's really the best thing that's ever happened to me.
I like how Tanitra just calls her out. She's like, really?
It took that for you to leave him? You know, the best thing that's happened to me since I was forced to cut off my own arm? Handicap parking at the damn mall!
She delivers another that one of so
my
good.
Favorite lines.
I feel
this
like
movie.
She grew as an actor in
she
between.
She really did.
She had her time to shine here. I really appreciated it.
Honestly, I feel like this is the breakout moment.
This is
her as opposed
role.
To the first one.
Oh,
yeah.
For sure, yeah. After I watched this, I was like, damn, she fucking killed that.
I like that she got a role in Gabby's movie, too.
I know, a better role. Like, she got dialogue.
To be fair, they did start off season two of Scream Queens saying Tanitra did such a good job, they invited her back for Saw 3D.
They did make that.
They were like, we couldn't not have her back.
But it's also kind of shitty that, like, all right, so you're going to play a white supremacist, and here's Tanitra getting an awesome role here.
Play a white supremacist, you're gonna have no lines besides help me Evan, and then we're gonna squish your head.
Yeah, but
you don't have to worry about a mark.
You get to be there with Chester Bennett.
I would honestly, I might take Chester Bennington.
Oh, Bennington. I always call him Bennett.
That doesn't make any sense. I'm glad I wrote this note on my hand because I already forgot that we said we were gonna do that.
Yep.
Okay. And then you know what else happens?
What?
Lawrence Gordon, a doctor.
Slow claps.
And then he breaks the fourth wall by saying he sure is glad to be an extra in your promotional DVD.
I love that. I like that he's just straight up. The funny thing here is he's calling him out. He's like, yeah, you're recording this shit. It's so stupid. It's terrible. And then everybody feels so awkward about it and they just start slow clapping with him. Yeah. Like, do we clap? I don't fucking know what to do here. And then like, Bobby's like, I guess this went relatively well, even though I got called out.
Yeah.
And people are kind of into it. Okay.
So the group concludes and Bobby tells his security, which would he have this big of an entourage for his level of celebrity?
I feel like he had an idea of what fame was going to be, and he was destined to make it that. So he's like, I've watched Entourage. Wahlberg was part of the series at one point. I want to be that.
Yeah, so he tells his security to take his wife to the car, and then when he walks out there, he gets pig-napped. Gibson's at the morgue, and he gets a call about the crash trap at the junkyard. And when he gets there, he wonders why the display. There's a huge team around them cleaning up everything, gathering evidence and whatnot. And in a mirror, it's written, Gibson, see for yourself. Yeah. And then the reverse bear trap is there.
Yep.
So Bobby wakes up and he's in this little cylindrical cage thing. And it turns out he's a liar, liar. Pants on fire. You know what? He should have been lit on fire. Pants on fire.
That would have been a great Saw trap. Yeah, like, why him on fire? Why starting from the pants? That would have been perfect.
So he has 60 minutes to get through the obstacles to his wife. So the S in survive is start your life anew. He gets his little cage gets pulled up over some knives and the bottom drops out and he's got to swing to avoid getting stabbed. And I wrote that this man has played some Donkey Kong Country.
Oh, yeah. That's what you do right there, man. You got to swing on them vines.
There is a flashback to him and Kale at the bar. He's got a cute little messy hairdo going on. I like this version of Bobby better. I bet Joyce liked that version of Bobby better, too.
Probably, yeah.
I bet he was, like, working some job and he was unhappy with his life. I wish, like, and this is the background that I imagined for him that I wish the movie had fleshed out. Where, like, he's working at a job he hates and it's, like, enough for them to pay their bills and, like, go to the bar and maybe out to eat once a month or something. But, like, he's just, like... a little bit upset with his life. And then Kale's like, man, look at this woman who survived her trap, and she feels inspired.
He's like, these people would be making bank off of this shit if they weren't so fucking ruined from the experience.
You know that this guy is corrupt because he said, you can make a mint selling your story like
Oh, yeah. This dude's scummy.
People that don't do scams don't say things like make a mint.
No. So yeah, they kind of come up with that plan. You get that whole thing there. So, okay.
Then he says, you understand your problems. But then we cut to Gibson real quick. He no gloves the reverse bear trap. He just raw dogs it and corrupts all of that shit and pops it in front of Jill and then calls her crazy.
I love it. He's like, you said that you had the fucking bear trap there, but your fucking fingerprints are on it. Jill, what are you, crazy?
Remake of How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, but with Chad Danello and Betsy Russell.
Ooh,
as Matthew McConaughey and Kate Hudson.
Kate Hudson, you have to give before you can receive.
It works.
Another Scream Queens tie-in, because Scream Queens from the TV series, that dude does Matthew McConaughey impressions the entire time.
Tanedra Howard and Gabby West play her friends at the magazine.
Yeah.
Tanedra gets to be Catherine Hahn.
Okay.
I feel like she deserves that.
Bubby Gunn is also one of the...
Yeah. Bubby Gunn is one of the sidekicks over at his ad agency.
Directed by James Gunn.
Yes!
Yeah, it's happening.
You know what? Can this be our sequel? It's not really a sequel, and we don't do sequels for this for franchise movies anyway, but I want that to be our sequel.
That's our sequel, yeah.
That's our pitch. so explosions happen at the junkyard crime scene, and Hoffman sends a tape to Gibson asking for Jill in exchange for stopping the game that's currently happening.
These are some of the most low-effort recording tapes in the entire Saw series.
Yeah, I feel like I could record something on my phone, and it would be better.
Yeah, it was just bad. But whatever, he's getting his message out there. Hoffman's on like a really tight crunch right here. He's got to get going.
He's got a game going, and he's trying to like save his own life, and he's also trying to murder Jill. So he's got a lot of moving parts.
It's
got to
be really stressful being a jigsaw killer. I can't imagine. That's too much on your plate.
He doesn't have very good work-life balance.
No, he does not.
Okay, so redefine your priorities. Nina, his publicist, is set up. This is where we found out that she's been his publicist for years. And then I was like, years? Years?
Yeah.
This has been happening for years?
That doesn't make any sense. The timeline.
Yes. We've lost all sense of the timeline, which it's just going to get worse as we go on, which is bound to happen with a franchise. Don't get me wrong. At some point, we're going to talk about Texas Chainsaw, and it's going to be a mess.
Well, this one right here is just like the whole series has been very consistent. Like, it's been one running timeline the entire time. And then you go and make that statement, and it just doesn't make any fucking sense.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense because we know canonically that this is supposed to have happened right after the ending of 6. And 6 was not that long after the ending of 5.
Yeah.
And like, the dude, the trust fund kid from part 5, is still in a sling in the support group, which is how we caught him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So it can't have been more than a few months. Like, there's no way that he's been doing this for years. It just doesn't make sense.
No.
I'm John Kramer, and this is the Silent Fish Hook. I was thinking of it as like a Jackass bit the entire time.
Oh, dude, this would be Steve-O's ultimate like swan song right here.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, dude. I mean, his voice is fucked up enough.
I gotta swallow a key to get me out of this deadly trap, and if we don't in time, my vocal cords get pierced forever. And also, it's on a fish hook. And then Pontius and Noxil are taking turns pulling it.
They rip it out, and like he's like, whoa, I'm talking normally again. What the
fuck?
Wow.
Oh, and they're like, hey, look at this little flesh on here. It looks like it's a vocal note.
Yeah, oh, God. Like, damn, dude, you had some shit down there this whole time. Okay, so like the whole thing is like they have to fish out this whole thing with the key with the fish hook, and if she makes any sounds, it causes the like little needles to like pierce her neck.
So we had a little decibel measurer in our lunchroom in elementary school, and if it got too loud, we got cups on our table about how loud we were allowed to talk. So if it got too loud, we got a red cup on our table.
Seriously?
That's
stupid.
Yeah. And I remember very distinctly because it was one day in second grade. I was still in both of my casts, and another kid who had broken his arm was in a cast as well. And my friend Jessica, same name, that's part of how we bonded. She wasn't there that day, so I'm sitting with Nick, and I already had complicated feelings about Nick because he was a good guy, but he never got made fun of for having a pink lunchbox, but I got made fun of having a blue lunchbox, and it just shows. Anyway,
if it makes you feel
better.
We were
at the lunch table,
okay,
and he punctured his milk pouch because milk is served in pouches in Tennessee, and he punctured it, and I went, oh no, and he went, oh no, and then a teacher came over and flipped over a red cup on our table, and we weren't allowed to talk for the rest of lunch.
That was like, that was 2 seconds away from becoming a Kool-Aid commercial.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
All right. Anyways.
Sometimes I used to puncture those on purpose because then you could get a second milk pouch. But if you punctured it in the tray, you could still drink it through the straw. So you got like extra chocolate milk.
You can cut this. This isn't even relevant. Or you can leave this in if you want to keep some like weird stories from school in here. But I remember like one time I was on a field trip with boys choir. And one of the guys, they got like a fountain drink. It was a foam drink and, you know, big drink. And he was happy about it. And he was walking back to the bus to go get it. And one of the boys just like kind of like walked over to him and he just like took his finger and went psh, like up like the fucking bottom of the cup. And it all just went psh, just pouring out from the bottom.
I'm sorry. Story that relates to that. And I know we're on such a tangent, but I don't even care because this movie is so silly anyway.
Okay.
So we were coming back from Quad State Band. My friend, we stopped at the Beaver Dam rest stop, which if you've ever been in Western Kentucky, everybody knows the Beaver Dam rest stop. So we're at the Arby's and it's like 8:50. They close at 9. And our band director's like, please eat quickly. We've got to go. And I'm so sick of you teenagers. And so we get our food. My friend knocks over his extra large Coke onto the floor. And you can see the person behind the register die inside. And they go and get the mop bucket and they start mopping it up. And we're cleaning up. And our band director's like, get on the bus. We got to go. And we're like, bye. Thanks for the food. And on the way out, my friend, the same one that knocked over his tree, kicks the mop bucket.
No!
And knocks
it over. No way. Oh, I feel so bad.
I think about that every time we go to Western Kentucky and stop and Beaver Dam. Like, I wonder if they still remember this. I wonder if that story has like traveled down the ages. That, and, like, these asshole kids came in here.
That person is now like a grizzled manager at an Arby's over there. They've seen some shit.
They run the mafia Arby's down the street from our house.
All right, we're way off base. We gotta get back on track. We gotta go back. All right,
all
right.
I'm leaving all of this in because these are all amazing stories.
Okay. Okay, so Joyce, like, or not Joyce, this girl dies because, like,
yeah,
she takes out, like, a whole chunk of shit off her throat. And
why couldn't you just... And here's the thing. I get why she screamed, because a lot of her tummy skin was pulled out.
He could have just like put his hand over her mouth.
Yeah. And he had the key. He was unlocking it. There was enough time for him to unlock it, but she wouldn't stop screaming. And so the little decibel meter was up so high and it just pierced her throat. So
I mean, that one's right. It's kind of like impossible to win. Like, that's just, you can't help from screaming from something
like
that.
Yeah, and she's gonna have so much internal bleeding.
Yeah.
Okay, so flashback to book signing.
Yes.
And we get some impeccable de-aging technology where a young John Kramer gets his signature in his book.
Oh, okay. Bobby. Because, yeah, Bobby is like continuing on and he finds the book that was autographed to John that day.
So I have a lot of notes about this.
Okay.
Because the first is, the person in front of John is Sarah without an H. I'm like, okay, fair. That's an important thing. I specify how to spell Jesse all the time. It's fine. So she, you know, talks about how much the book means to her and then she leaves. And then John comes up and he goes, John, with or without an H, doesn't matter. And Bobby, instead of being like, I want to write your name correctly, he goes, all right, we'll do it with an H this time because he's an asshole.
He's like, this is just going on eBay. I don't give a shit.
Yeah. So, And then I saw behind him, he's got his little banner. You know how they do it, like, conventions and book signings and all of that? And it's, like, Bobby Dagan, and he looks like Michael Scott in his, like, mock cover for Somehow I Manage. And he's like,
you were so right. Oh, my God, you were so right. Yeah, you know, he doesn't know what the fuck to do. He's just like, what the fuck do I do with my hands?
Yeah. And then John takes off the book cover, the slip cover thing, the... that goes over top of it, and he tosses it. Bobby goes, we've met, don't need your picture.
Yeah, he's awesome.
And then Bobby's like, what do I do with this?
He's growing him. He's like, you know what, like, something about the old days, people lying, something, something, they'd be public. Whatever. Yeah. I don't fucking know.
Yeah, Egyptians being publicly...
ridiculed for being publicly... Whatever.
Yeah.
He's gonna kill you.
Whatever,
that's basically what he's getting to here.
Which... how much shit do you think John actually makes up versus how much do you think he knows? Because he's clearly a very smart man, and I don't take that away from him. But also, I wonder if it's like, you know, the Sylvester Stallone of it all. They call them skippies because when they're up in the air, they...
That's not Sylvester Stallone. That's God, Steven Seagal.
Steven Seagal.
Sylvester Stallone's legit.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, sorry. Steven Seagal. Skip.
Okay, well, we're like... okay, Bobby goes into the next room. We still got 44 minutes of this shit.
I know.
Billy busts in through the room in 3D. And he's got to lift like bars over to save somebody from, like, by slowing down the circuits. I don't know. Like, I don't fucking understand
he's,
what this
yeah,
trap
he's
is.
Yeah, he's got to do a calf raise, basically.
Okay. Yeah, and like and when he does that, it's going to...
this is the eye. This is the eye of it. Or the V, the verify your self-worth through commitment.
Yes, okay.
So he's got to save his lawyer, who is, like, being slowly rotated up towards a spike for her eyes and mouth, and he's got to do a calf raise. And that's all he's got to do. Well, when he does the calf raise, he gets poked in the ribs a little bit.
A little bit. He gets stabbed right in his ribs. Yeah, that shit looks like it hurts. But, like, I feel like I would be able to hold that.
Yeah, like, it sucks for sure. I pointed out to Travis last night that kill to miss ratio is lower than Jeff's.
Yeah, Jeff's. For sure. Yeah, Oh, God, man. Yeah. I don't, like, I feel like he could have done so well with this right here. Like, this one right here didn't seem too bad. Just, like, use the adrenaline, man. Harness that shit.
He has no adrenaline because he feels nothing.
Yeah, he's a psychopath. Well, he fails, and his lawyer gets stabbed in the eye and mouth. That's very brutal.
Yeah, so we had a POV shot on the eye stakes, and I said that they went to the Lucio Fulci School of Eye Penetration, but they didn't pass the final, because when we didn't see the actual eye penetration. We saw, like, the close-up towards it.
You see it?
Not. Fulci would not be happy with that.
No, he would have done way more with that.
He was like, we didn't see any, we didn't see it, like, pierce the eye. Like, we just saw it kind of go into the eye socket.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, he would have done way better with that.
Okay, so Gibson asks Jill about Bobby, if she knows him. And then he gets another MPEG from Hoffman saying something about being at a crossroads and there's a new dawn.
I didn't understand at the time, but, like, as soon as he watched that video, he's like, I fucking got it. And then he's like, all right, let's go Rogers.
Yeah, so apparently Hoffman has, like, a past with this guy, which we'll find out in a minute.
Yeah.
I ignore your inner demons. I think that's what it said. I kind of missed it when it was written, and I was like, oh, that sounds right. So Bobby... I wrote that that's a rough name to shout, because we go through this with Joyride 2, where her fiance's name is Bobby. She's going, Bobby! It's just not a name that you can really, like, scream in terror easily.
No.
It always sounds kind of stupid.
Say Bob. Bob.
Robert!
Bobby. Robert.
Robert!
Yeah. No, that's got a little bit more gravity to it. Yeah. Yeah, Robert.
They've got to play the worst team building game on the planet, which is one of them's...
Did you say it was Kel?
No.
Okay. It's Kel.
So, yeah,
Kel
is
buddy.
Yeah. So they're in a room on the second floor, at least the second floor. And the floor is mostly knocked out. Kale's on one side, Bobby's on the other.
There's, like, wooden planks.
There's wooden planks. Yeah. The floor is mostly gutted. Kale is in a blindfold, and Bobby's gotta guide him across, like, a very bad team building game. And then I wrote, have these planks been tested for durability? And as soon as I wrote that, Kale busts through one of them.
No, okay, I wanna give the guy that played Kale props here, because he played this shit well. He played, like, scared. Like, he's got, like, the nervous, like, taps of, like,
I believed it.
Yeah, he
if
did
I
a
found
good job.
Out that Dean Armstrong actually died filming this scene, I would believe it.
Yeah.
So it made me think of like Cutthroat Kitchen, which if you don't know, it's a Food Network show hosted by Alton Brown. And they've got like, it's a cooking show, but they can sabotage the other players with things. So, like if you're making a Philly cheesesteak, you can take away the other player's cheese and they have to get it from like, I don't know, like Doritos or something.
Yeah.
So one of the things about that show is that they test all of the sabotages they do. They have people make sure that it can be done, that they can make the food. Yeah, they want to make sure that it's plausible.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they don't want somebody to just like absolutely fail because it's a dud of a sabotage or because they went too wild. They actually test all of them to make sure that it's doable. And I was like, then I sat there and I started wondering how vetted all of the saw traps are, because I know like John Kramer is like an engineer, but I'm like, how much is he testing all of this stuff? Is he doing like a Mythbusters thing where they've got like the dummy and he's like testing the weight and everything? So I went through like a whole rabbit hole while this whole scene was going down.
Well, at this point, it's not John Kramer anymore. It's Hoffman, who has been like, he's on record as being bad at this shit.
Yeah. Like he passed his engineering class, but only because he cheated off the nerd that he then like swirled as soon as class was over. He
copied off that paper. Yeah. So yeah, Kel dies. He just like falls right off of there.
No, he doesn't fall. He gets
he gets yanked up and then he gets hanged by his noose. Yeah,
because Bobby makes the bold decision to toss the key to a blind man.
Only couldn't cut it as a blind man. he had 5 seconds left, man. There's no way he was going to get it to him any other way.
It was a Hail Mary, and I get that, but like, it was also kind of a bad choice on Bobby's part because he said, pull your hands closer to your chest, and then it bounced off of Kale's chest. So his hands had been where they originally were.
He was just doomed. He was not going to survive that one right there. All right, so Gibson busts into the warehouse where Hoffman recorded the last video. And
it was known as the Crossroads, which is where that line from the video came in. And he said, this is when I was a rookie cop. Hoffman came in and saved me because a drug dealer was attacking me, but he shot the guy. Six times. He shot him six times. And I was like, he didn't really have, like, yeah, he assaulted me, but he didn't have to do that. And so I reported to him to Internal Affairs, and then he bullied me until I eventually transferred to Internal Affairs myself.
No, and it's like, Roger's like, okay, what happened after you told him? I was like, well, he got promoted and I got transferred. So, like, it didn't really go too well.
Yeah, but then he was like, oh, that guy was a man from Clear Dawn Psychiatric Facility, so that must be where the game's going on. That's the other part of the line. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Bobby has to pull his teeth from the back of his mouth to find the combo to the lock to get through to where Joyce is.
God damn.
And at this point, Joyce can see him, he can see her, and he's like, I don't want you to watch this. And it's like, well, I mean,
it's like, I've already seen some fucked up shit. Like, she's been watching this entire game.
She's seen all of it.
It's like, I saw you pull a hook out of a woman's throat. Like,
yeah, that was pretty fucked up. I was friends with her.
Yeah, like, if you're just
Nina and I regularly went to yoga together.
Not really thinking about this, though. You pointed out, I didn't notice before, but like, when he pulls out one of his teeth, like, the nerve is still attached to it.
Yeah.
Like, oh, god damn, dude.
Also, there was like this whole like excruciating scene of him like banging his hand up against the wall to try and get the tooth out, and he still doesn't with the pliers, and he has to reach in and just yank it out himself.
God. It's so bad.
And somehow the blood is only in a neat line down the front of him.
And he's not screaming in pain. Like, after he pulls out the teeth, he's smiling. He's like, hey, yeah, all right, I did it.
All right, I got to eat that one. Save all that dental cut.
I had to give for me to be able to receive.
Okay, so the SWAT is at the building, and the MPEG IP was traced to the junkyard where the game was played.
Pizza Auto Body.
Mm-hmm. So at the junkyard, they find a hidden tunnel behind the mirror where that like first note to Gibson was written, and so they bust through very Candyman style.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we see Bobby embrace every day as if it is your last. And the tape confuses Joyce. Bless you. Because she was like, wait, you've never been in a game? This is your first game? You're a rookie? I don't like this. I don't like my odds here.
Yeah.
She's like, I never bet on the rookies. You know that. We're in deep debt because of my gambling. That's why you may have this whole thing in the first place. Shit.
I feel so bad for her in this scene here too, because she's learning that her husband is like a fucking fraud, and then she's probably gonna die because he doesn't like, he's gonna like fuck this shit up, obviously.
Yeah, I wrote that he confesses, and because I knew the ending of it, I was like, confesses then fails the game because he's a trifling asshole.
I do love this though, that like Jigsaw is like, all right, motherfucker, you said you did this shit, let's put it to the test, you actually do it. Then
here's the thing, we debated the plausibility of if this is doable or not last night, because they're implying that it isn't plausible in the movie to have your weight supported by the pectoral muscles while also plugging it in. But we've watched Dave Navarro swing over a crowd in Las Vegas while telling us to live Moss.
Yeah.
So
Taco Bell. Just swing.
I mean, I feel like it's possible.
Yeah, you know? It's doable. I mean, I don't know. Dave Navarro also weighs significantly less than this guy does.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like if they'd cast Dave Navarro, he would have been like, all right. And then like actually Pearson's on, they'd be like, no, no, no.
Dude, we have effects people here. Yeah, come on, man.
So meanwhile, at Pete's Autobody, they find a hooded figure in a room surrounded by computers, and they assume it's Hoffman because they're stupid. They haven't read any of the other Jigsaw case files. And it's actually one of the Nazis, and they're like, because Hoffman switched out himself for that Nazi in the body bag.
I was gonna say, to be fair though, there has been one instance where that actually did end up being Jigsaw, and that was in the first one.
That's true.
They actually did catch him there by surprise.
But then he broke himself out.
Yeah, so he won it, but it's still like, you know, it's possible to actually catch him.
I guess that's a fair point. That's a fair point. Anyway, we see Hoffman arting the autopsy, the forensic pathologist.
I love that. Like, he unzips it and then he's just like, surprise, motherfucker, and just stabs him right in the neck. And this is where Hoffman goes full blown slasher, and I love every fucking minute of this.
Yeah, so he's like killing the person that traced the IP address because she's like trying to call Gibson, but Gibson and Rogers are getting shot down because there's like a little, like the automatic machine gun that Jigsaw loves.
He also kills like the autopsy dude too. He kills like five fucking people in this scene.
Yeah, he just goes on a tear through this. It's very Satan's Little Helper or the Hitcher.
Yeah. I love the move though that he does where he stabs the woman and then like he like knocks on the door and then he takes her
head.
Yeah, it's like there's her face right there and they're like, okay, it's cool. And then they unlock it and he just busts it and starts fucking them up too.
Yeah, so he gets to Jill's cell and she ends up stabbing him.
Oh, he also
and then
shoots
she runs.
Rogers like in the eye there too.
Yeah.
Like Rogers is dead now.
No, Rogers is the crime scene. That's a different cop.
No.
Rogers was Gibson. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, then whatever. He shoots that dude. And this is where it's very obvious that they are not filming this shit together. This is where we started rewinding, like, okay, that's a body double. That's a body double.
Hold on. Before we get to that, because we cut to the dramatic finish of Joyce and Bobby.
Is that before that?
This is all happening in between each other.
Okay.
Before, because we're going to wrap up with Hoffman and Jill.
Gotcha. Okay.
So before that, Bobby can't do the thing. He falls. He doesn't have enough time to climb up there again.
Yes.
And I wrote, because this is a version of the Bronze Bull, which is where like people would be put in a bronze bull
the worst
and burned
torture
alive.
Devices in history.
Yes. Except it's a pig. So I called it the Iron Ham. And I wrote that Joyce was doomed to eternal hamnation.
Ah, Jesse, come on. I'll give you some props for that.
Thank
That's
you.
Pretty good.
Thank you.
I'm conflicted on that.
I wrote it in all caps.
Good job.
Thank you.
I'm happy for you.
So, anyway, this is where we come back to Hoffman and Jill. And they're clearly...
Does he survive?
Seems like it.
We never see him again. Like,
we never
see him
again.
There's potential for him to come back in the series.
There is. They didn't completely kill him off. Somehow... This triathlon SO gets to live on.
She dies.
Yep.
He lives. That's fucked up. I guess he's got to live with it. That's worse than death.
Is it? Because I feel like Joyce's death was kind of worse.
You're right. For him, he's probably like, oh no. Okay, I'm okay. Yeah. Well, my tits kind of hurt.
you'd want me to move on? Okay. Yeah. So Hoffman ends up catching up to Jill, and he sees the two reverse bear traps. One is clearly newer than the other, so he takes the older one, which is Amanda's original one.
Yes.
He puts it on Jill, and we see it in action, and it's just a big gaping hole in her face.
Get the face chunks flying at you in 3D, though.
Yep.
That's a new thing.
So Hoffman burns the whole like workshop and whatnot, and he goes out, and I wrote that he gets pork-secuted
by the three little pigs.
Yeah,
which are Lawrence Gordon, a doctor. also the Bubbies from the intro.
Oh, was that the Bubbies?
That's the Bubbies, aww, dude. The two little dudes that were in like the little love dispute with
Dina. The little Dutch boys.
Yeah. I don't know why they're involved, but yeah, they're like, okay, fuck it. Like, you guys join us too, I guess.
So then this is where we found out that Lawrence Gordon, a doctor, has been involved the entire time. He's done all of the medical stuff. So you remember in part two when there was a key behind somebody's eye?
Mm-hmm.
That was it. You remember when there's a key in William's ribs? That was him. Remember when there was a key in Nina's tummy? Yeah. That was
him. Remember that, when they had to stitch up that one dude's eyes?
That was him.
Yeah.
So yeah, like, Jigsaw like nursed him to health, fitted him with a prosthetic, very Hook Hobie style. Jack Reacher fans will get it. So he was told to act on John's behalf if something were to ever happen to Jill. He said act on his behalf immediately.
Yes.
And this was very immediate. Like,
he fucking, like, he
was,
like,
he following him? Could he not have just stopped him from killing Jill?
Or I did... like, he still has like some hatred to John. Where he's like, all right,
I will avenge her, but I will also let her die.
Yeah, like you said, if something happens to her, I'm not going to like
do I'm not going to prevent it from happening.
Yeah, but if it does, I'll do it. Sure.
Should be Lawrence Gordon, a lawyer. Am I right?
And he takes him and he takes him back to the bathroom from the first Saw movie and he locks him up where Adam was. And then this time he takes the saw. And he's like, you're not getting one, buddy.
And then Costas asks Carrie. This is not the characters asking one another. Costas asks Carrie what the fuck he's doing.
He's like, this is my franchise. I'm Jigsaw. And Carrie's like, no, I got brought back for this
Carrie
one.
Carrie said, you're not Jigsaw, bitch. Yeah. You're not Jigsaw.
He's like, you know what? You don't like the 3D? 3D toss.
Yeah.
He tosses the saw in 3D down the hallway. And we get a lot of 3D with it, too. And then
the most 3D of the whole movie.
He tells Hoffman, game over. And then he slams the door, and then that's it. And you know what? For right now, this is goodbye for Hoffman. Will we see him later? I don't know. But I will say one thing. We don't see a body.
Do not see a body.
If Saw has taught us anything, if you don't see that body...
If they are not confirmed dead and you see it on your screen, that doesn't mean that they're dead.
It does not mean.
And even if you do see that, that doesn't mean they can't come back.
Exactly. Yeah. People have come back from death plenty of times. So we may see him again.
Maybe in a backwards ball cap.
I'm looking forward to that.
It has to be a big ball cap. Costas Mandalore has a large head. No offense to him. I also have a large head. So
yeah. He can rock him, dude. He's fucking Costas. All right. And that's it. That's it for Saw 3D.
Eight and a half. I'm bumping it.
Okay. I'll keep my 8.
Okay. 8.25.
Yeah, I really, really like this one. It's just so fucking stupid and fun.
Yeah, like, you don't have to think about it. Just enjoy the ride. And that's all I want from this movie.
Yeah.
Ty had to go out at 4 minutes and 10 seconds and at 28 minutes and 35 seconds, so that automatically takes her down to an 8, right? However, she spent the next 40 minutes squeaking Ralphie, and that's her loudest, squeakiest toy, and that's... as annoying as it was, it's a compliment.
Yeah, she was having a great time.
So I think that bumps it up a whole point for how long she was squeaking and the fact that it was Ralphie. So Tally's giving it a 9. She was feeling it.
She had a great time.
And guess what? Zoe watched it. Sometimes she was on my lap, but most importantly, sometimes she was on Lawrence Gordon shark bed.
Yeah. We actually have a little like Squishmallow bed.
Yeah, so Squishmallow makes pet beds, and we bought a cat bed one for them. For the cats for Christmas, and it's shaped like a shark because Telly has a toy shark and we thought it would be cute. And when we got it in the mail, it was labeled as Gordon the Shark.
Yeah.
So we've been referring to it as Lawrence Gordon the Shark Bed.
And there's also an explosion.
An explosion. She had a really good time. And then we watched Final Destination, and as we know, there's a very infamous explosion in that.
Yes.
She had a very good night last night. And we're about to watch Fast and Furious after we record this. So
you better believe explosions.
Good time. It's a good time for Zoe this weekend.
Yeah. All right. So good stuff from the pets. All right. So who did you relate to?
That's a very good question. I think I relate to Tanidra at group therapy because I remember going to group therapy in college right after my apartment had been broken into. And I was like, this has honestly been one of my worst fears, is a home invasion. And they're like, now you know you can survive one of your worst fears. I was like, no, now I know one of my worst fears can actually happen to me.
Like, now I know I wasn't present for when that shit happened. And I might die if I'm actually there.
And they were like, that's not the turn we expected. Granted, it wasn't like the therapist that said it. It was one of the other group members. Yeah. So yeah, I related to Shanidra.
Okay. God, man, who the fuck did I relate to in this movie? There's some wild characters this time around. God, I'm going to make it good. I think something, it wasn't confirmed, but something tells me that Adam was still there in that bathroom. And I'm going to relate to Adam, because if I could be locked and chained to death in a bathroom with any one person other than you, it would be Costas. I would, you know, we'd make some fun out of it. It'd be like scary stories because it's dark.
Yeah.
And yeah, we'd have some good time.
Okay.
We'd just die together.
Okay.
Yeah. There's like no other good person to relate to in this movie, and I did not have any therapy.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
And I ain't a grifter. I'm not that boy.
I hope not. I don't want to be sent to Eternal Ham Nation because of you. So.
Yeah, I don't want to do that to you either. Okay. New tagline, since we don't do Dream Sequel, but we kind of pitched a Dream Sequel.
No. Instead of Dream Sequel for this, we've been doing Which Trap Would You Survive?
Which Trap. Okay. So we've got the Saw one from the opening there.
That one doesn't count.
Okay, yeah, that one's...
Oh, I thought you meant, like, the flashback at the very opening. Oh, the love dudes, triangle. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so we've got that one.
That one's easy. Like, I can survive that one. Like I already said, like, just, like, move it in between Dina and one of the dudes, and, you know, like,
yeah.
Somebody's going to get a little cut up, but everybody can survive that. But let's go through. Let's entertain the rest of it.
Okay, so then we've got the swinging over the knives.
Yeah.
We've got the neck piercing. Silent fishhook.
I couldn't do that one.
We've got the calf raise of doom.
I could do that one, maybe.
And then we've got the iron ham. Which that one, I feel like we need to throw out iron ham, because that doesn't count.
Kales.
Yeah. Worst team building.
That one I'm not making. No. That one feels almost impossible. I feel like
I could walk across those boards without a blindfold, so never mind with a blindfold.
Yeah, in that's, 60 seconds. Yeah, no, that's just not happening.
I think I could do the calf raises, because I've been doing calf raises since I was 3 years old, because my dance teacher.
Okay.
So I can handle the calf raises.
All right, so we got the love triangle and the calf raises.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So I'm very curious to see what everybody says when we put out the poll this weekend.
I am too, yeah. We'll have those results next week. All right. So time for a new tagline.
Okay.
Oh, I hear Talia out there squeaking now.
That must be Prickly Pete.
Yeah. It's a silent squeak.
Okay. So a new tagline. What are the taglines we have?
They were all kind of bad.
Heart like, pounding 3D. Traps come alive. Time has come for all to experience. I don't want to do like an ending tagline, because we know now that it's not like the end of the franchise.
Yeah. I don't want that either. Okay.
Can we just say that that's a wrap on Costas?
Is it though?
Maybe, but for now it is. It definitely is.
How about not my jigsaw?
Hashtag not my jigsaw.
Costas would have worn it that way with Gordon. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, internet review. Jesse, what did you pull for us?
Well, I know how we both feel about this movie. I know how we felt about this movie for years, even before we started doing this podcast. This is not a new revelation that we like trash movies, you guys. So, I went ahead and I pulled a 1-star. Off of IMDb.
All right.
I'm not going to read the whole thing. You know how when you go, I'm going to say, you know, I don't know if the audience knows, but because we do this, when you go to the reviews, sometimes we have to sort by the reviewer rating so we can find like negative or positive depending on how the other person feels.
Yeah.
This I didn't have to sort because it was a lot of negative write-up at the top. Oh, was it? Okay. Yeah.
That's and so
they
surprising.
They were all really long ones. This one is the shortest one I found. I'm not going to read the whole thing still, though, because it was pretty long. Okay. There are so many things this movie does wrong that it's easier to just list and describe some of them. The acting is atrocious. I'm not just talking in comparison with other films. The acting in this one is some of the worst acting I've ever seen. Because it was made in 3D, the graphics are cheesy and the gore effects are all pinkish and over the top. Wow. The last bastion of reason to watch a Saw film, those brutal traps, are effectively ruined by 3D. Whereas I thought this movie was going to really wrap up the series in a meaningful way, instead it was just its own plotline for 80 minutes and lazily wraps up the big picture stuff in the final 10. Even the big surprise in the final minutes actually turned me off instead of provoking the desired wow effect.
Well, I mean, they're not wrong about it, like the bad pink blood.
Oh, yeah. That was like one of my bads at the beginning. So,
and I mean, the 3D effects were terrible in this one.
They were pointless. It was like a waste of money. They could have put that money towards, I don't know, Saw 8?
Yeah, they could have used that extra few million to just fucking split the finale.
Yeah, they've made Saw movies for cheaper.
I mean, and like, all of the Saw movies are cheap. You know you're going to make your money back and then some.
Yes. Like, I mean, everybody's coming out to see them. And the thing is, we talked about this last month with Saw 6, is that it's one of those that's generally reviewed well, but it, for some reason, it just didn't do well in the box office.
Yeah.
And which is, it's hard to figure out why now in 2024 when people are like, yeah, no, actually, this is one of the best ones.
Look, I... Some people hate when franchises go forever and ever. I love it if it's a franchise that I love. And I
will
hate...
go watch Saw 82 in the theaters.
I
you
will
know?
Too. And I hate how these studios like overreact whenever one movie does a little bit worse than the previous movie. And they're like, okay, finale. Next movie's got to be the end of it. That's what's happening with Fast and Furious also.
Well, okay, and it's so funny because I was just about to compare this to Fast and Furious because, as you guys know, we're working our way through the franchise. We're about to watch Fast X tonight. We bought a 6-pack of Corona. We're grilling. We're making a whole night of it.
Yes.
But I feel like this franchise is very similar to it. Like, put Roman and Tej in space. Let's put Jigsaw in a rocket ship.
Oh,
you know
my
what
God.
I mean? Like, as over the top as you want with this, I'm here for it. Dude, no matter what.
I want, like, crossovers with other horror franchises.
Oh, my God. And make it, like, one of the stupidest ones possible. Like, Saw meets Ginger Dead Man.
I want Saw with Hellraiser. Dude, Hellraiser, like, Jigsaw and Pinhead would be able to, like, trade notes. Like, ooh, okay,
yeah.
You're torturing people this way? Okay.
Like, yeah, I just, like, let this franchise be as stupid as it wants to be. I'm here for it no matter what. Like, we've got the serious thought-provoking ones at this point. Now I just want to see, like, what storyline they come up with. I'm curious to see, like, what's happening, you know?
Would Clive Barker be like, yeah, Jigsaw, like, Saw and Hellraiser is definitely not from my mind. It's from my butthole.
Probably.
Yeah, he would be furious with that.
I think, and I want Doug Bradley, but I don't want him playing Pinhead. I want him playing his character from Wrong Turn 5. So it's a three-way crossover.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Do we have listener reviews?
We do.
Okay.
All right. So we got a couple here. First off, we'll go with our Instagram review, which is Cube Saves.
Okay.
Cubesay says needs more yo-yos to the camera.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree, man. Like, this movie needed more 3D effects if you're gonna do a 3D movie for this. Like, it's just, it feels like a pointless little thing that was tacked on last minute.
Yeah,
it's just, it's unnecessary.
We need to meet somewhere in the middle between we're casting people only for what they can bring to the 3D versus, like, we're casting people and we're gonna maybe put some 3D effects somewhere.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
We need somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, you gotta have something.
Like how my Bloody Valentine was.
Yeah, exactly. It was. That's the fucking gold standard right there.
Also, I want everybody to know in our personal lives, we've started referring to the Supernatural Brothers as J-Pads and Consolation Prize.
Consolation Prize, yeah. He is.
Travis loves J-Pads.
Let's just be real people. Okay, speaking of relationships, we have Tyler with his review over on Twitter. Tyler says, the Twilight relationship dynamic opening was a lot. This isn't the worst, but it isn't one of my favorites. I think the fates of Jill and Joyce seem unfair and upset me. It wasn't Joyce's fault her husband was a liar, and her trap is one of the more painful. Love the end, though.
I agree with all of this, except I love the little Dutch boys Twilight opening track.
I know. I love. We're breaking up. I guess we're breaking up with you, Dina. Like, it's just. So
I feel like
stupid.
Ryan is Jacob, because Jacob would be the one to be like, "Do you really want to die over some chick that fucked me in your bed 2 days ago?"
Yeah, he's like.
And Edward would be like, "Yeah, I do. Actually, I already took a cut. Like, I would die for her."
I think so too. I think that's.
And Jacob would be like, "Fuck, wrong answer." God damn it. Okay. Yeah. And then, like, as soon as her wound gets cut, he goes, suddenly I don't love her. It's weird. It's weird how that happened.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. Like, Joyce, she has the worst. No, I agree. Joyce had a very... Yeah. That was one of my things about this. I mean, I'm not going to, like, knock the movie for it, but, like, you know, like, yeah, it's fucked up. And Jill's at least, like... She's an accessory at this point. You know
she
what I
is.
Mean?
She's actively involved in some of them.
Yeah, so I feel less bad for her.
Yeah.
But still, I get it. I feel bad for Kostas being locked up. I don't want Kostas to be locked up.
I love Kostas as a villain.
I do too. He plays it so well.
Okay, here's the thing. You know how you love villains in movies?
Uh-huh.
This is how I feel about reality TV villains. Can I make that connection for you? If you listen to our Patreon bonus episode, then you would know.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. Okay. Okay. All right. Okay, so that's it.
That's it.
That's it for Saw 3D, folks.
And fortunately, that's not it for Saw. We still have three more movies to cover, plus one later, but that'll come after we wrap up the franchise for now.
Yeah.
So... yay.
All right. So, we, have
March coming up.
Jessie does have her movie picked out.
Yeah, actually I do. And it's a Shudder original. So that's the place you watch it. And it's Jacob's Wife.
Yeah.
So I'm very excited about this. I love this movie. I've been really excited to rewatch it. We got Barbara Crampton. We got Bonnie Aarons. We've got Kitten in the closing credits.
You got the fucking guy.
Oh, the guy that we can never remember his name.
It starts with an L.
The guy.
Larry something.
Hold on.
He is from Your Next.
Yeah, the beginning of Your Next. Have we covered
He's
Your Next
a
yet?
A lot of fucking movies. No, we haven't.
Your Next. Let's go ahead and do that. He's in fucking everything, and we always call him that guy.
I don't know why we can never remember his name. We talk about him plenty.
Either we do. We talk about him so much. Larry Fessenden.
Larry Fessenden. That's because it's a different last name than you're used to.
Yeah, because we always want to be like Fassender.
Yeah.
I think that's what we always try and call him. It's Fassenden. Larry Fassenden plays Jacob. Babs plays Jacob's wife. Bonnie Aaron plays a vampire. It's amazing.
I think Carter is also in that movie too. Carter, you dick. I think he's her husband. And that too.
No. Larry's her husband. Yeah. I think Carter is the guy that like comes to town that she's friends with that starts the whole vampire thing.
You're right. Yeah. You're right. Okay. Whatever.
Anyway, I'm very excited about this movie. I've dressed as her character for Halloween before. It's a very good time if you have Shudder, watch it. If you don't have Shudder, maybe try it free for 7 days. They do the trials and stuff, and you can watch it there.
Yeah.
It's a really good time. So.
Yeah. All right. So that's what we're doing next week. So be on the lookout for that.
And to know the rest of our March schedule, just make sure that you're following us on social media. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram and Threads, at Least Favorite Scary Movie Podcast. And we're on Twitter and Blueski, at Least Fave Pod. You can also find us on our website, whatsyourleastfavoritescarymovie.com. And if you want to, you can email us at leastfavoritescarymovie@gmail.com.
And we would like to shout out our patrons out there, like Joe.
Freakatron.
As is his name. Amber and Michael.
Yes. Thank you guys so much. We got some announcements about the Patreon coming later in March. We already announced it to our budget tier patrons. That's coming. I also want to give a special extra shout out to our patron Joe, who's also just our friend Joe.
Yeah.
Because he was up here for our Kentucky Mutant Fan meetup this past weekend. And he was like, "Hey, I'm still listening to your Slaughterhouse episode, but have you guys discussed that it's set in Lexington?" And I was like, "What the fuck are you talking about, Joe?" And he was like, "Yeah, when Alpha drives to the hospital, the GPS says Sanny's Lexington." I was like, "Are you fucking kidding me?" And he pulls out his phone and shows me a screenshot of it. I was like, "Well,
that's so cool.
Damn.
I know.
That's amazing." I'm very upset we never noticed it, but I'm also very grateful for that knowledge now, and I'm ready to rewatch the movie yet again and pay attention to that. Also going to call some bullshit on, because the sorority houses in town, they just rent houses. Like, it's not, we UK doesn't have that kind of a sorority life.
Movie magic. But they also don't have sloths running around here, too, killing people.
That's what you think.
I guess so. All right, so that's our things.
Yeah, and if you want to support us in other ways outside of the Patreon, you can do so by just rating, reviewing, and subscribing. As we talked about last week, it makes a big difference.
Yeah, it does.
Because it recommends us to other people that like horror movie podcasts.
We're seeing that shit actually happen on these platforms, so it's really cool.
It makes a big difference.
Yeah, we really appreciate y'all doing that stuff for us.
Thank you so much.
All right. Let's call it for Saw 3D.
All right, that's it.
We'll see y'all next week.
Until next time. Bye.
Bye.